This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. I wanted to talk today about Emily Dickinson and her gardens. Before I start talking about that, I would like to try to remember a poem that I relate to. I'm doing this from memory, so I may get a few words wrong. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Don't tell. They'd banish us, you know. How stupid to be somebody. How public, like a frog, to tell your name the livelong day to an admiring bog. If I were to pose a question for you, saying the name Emily Dickinson and asking what you thought of, I would suppose that most of you would first think poet. And then perhaps some of the other things that we know about Dickinson, white dress, cloistered woman. But I doubt that many of you would think gardens and gardening. And yet, in her hometown in Massachusetts, if you said the name Emily Dickinson, I would venture to bet that most of the people there would think gardening. She was known in her township as a wonderful gardener. "I was reared in a garden, you know," she's quoted as saying. I'd like to use words from two books about Dickinson's gardens. The one, Emily Dickinson's Gardens, A Celebration of a Poet and a Gardener by Martha McDowell, and The Gardens of Emily Dickinson by Judith Farr. In thinking about Emily Dickinson as a gardener, beyond being the stuff of legend, she was also a real person devoted to her family with pleasures and pastimes and friends who were important to her. She shared a love of plants with her parents and siblings. To friends, she sent bouquets, and to her numerous correspondents, over 1,000, she often enclosed flowers to punctuate a message. She collected wildflowers, walking with her dog, Carlo. She studied botany at Amherst Academy, which, by the way, was started by her grandfather. She grew houseplants and tended a glassed conservatory off her father's study. In winter, she forced hyacinth bulbs. In summer, she knelt on a red blanket in her flower borders, performing horticulture's familiar rituals. Spring in Amherst is euphoric, a visual olfactory high. Emily called spring an inundation. Bright green leaves pick up the wind, mimicking the sound of a stream, makes riffling over rocks. The sun heats up blossoms, drawing out their scent. "Today is very beautiful," Emily once wrote to her brother Austin. "Just as bright, just as blue, just as green and white and crimson as the cherry trees full in bloom, and the half-opening peach blossoms, and the grass just waving, and sky and hill and cloud can make it, if they try." For her first 9 years, Emily encountered spring outside the doors of the old Dickinson homestead. In 1840, however, Emily and her family moved to a house on North Pleasant Street, a few blocks from where she had been born. Emily had new ground to garden. We don't know much about the North Pleasant garden. The only surviving picture shows a comfortable white clapboard house with a large porch that looks out on fruit trees in the front yard. Emily wrote to Austin in spring, "Our trees are all very full of blossoms now, and they look very beautiful. We found that the admission of girls to such lectures as they could understand at the university was a practice of some years' standing, and no evil had been found to result from it." In addition to his lectures, Dr. Hitchcock also preached to Sunday services. "When flowers eventually died, and I was a child," Emily remembered, "I used to read Dr. Hitchcock's book on the flowers of North America. This comforted their absence, assuring me they lived." In addition to Dr. Hitchcock and his books, Amherst Academy introduced Emily to other books on flowers. The study of plants and flowers, considered a genteel occupation for women. Open the little brown book that Emily opened and read the introduction from Mr. Lincoln. The study of botany seems peculiarly adapted to females. The objects of investigation are beautiful and delicate. Its pursuit, leading to exercise in the open air, is conducive to health and cheerfulness. So women were thought to be especially adept at collecting flowers. Botany was the rage for theological reasons as well. During those decades of evangelical Protestantism in Amherst, studying natural phenomena was considered an avenue to understanding the plan of the deity. A popular saying was, "His pencil grows in every flower." Emily Dickinson was given an herbarium by her father, but not the sort of herbarium that we consider an herbarium now. Years ago, I worked in the herbarium on campus. One of my dear friends and curators of the herbarium calls the herbarium a plant morgue. Emily collected a specimen of each plant, over 400 of them, then pressed and dried them in between sheets of blotting paper. It's likely that she had a plant press to go along with the herbarium. A press is made of two rectangular pieces of wood or an assembled wood lathe with heavy straps to tie it together. Otherwise, she would have dried her plants in the pages of large books. Emily laid out the dried plants, not exactly like a collage, but as a graphic designer might. Each specimen is carefully mounted with strips of gummed paper and neatly labeled in her best penmanship. The layouts are lovely, and Lila Schultz, who is the herbarium person and probably the authority on Western flora, told me that sometimes herbariums, as we know them today, will receive an herbarium of the book sort, and they're very valuable monetarily, not because they are particularly accurate, but because they are a curiosity. On many pages, Emily offset a single large specimen with several smaller ones. Sometimes the arrangements are whimsical, two daisies crisscrossed at the bottom of a page like swords, supporting a coat of arms. Others are vigorous, three stems fanned out over a tripartite leaf of hepatica. Later in the album, Emily inserted more specimens per page as if she worried about running out of room. All the pages in the album, as she continued to collect specimens, she had to fit them in wherever she found space. Next time, I hope to be able to continue thinking about Emily Dickinson, and by using the book by Judith Farr on her gardens. Thank you for listening. Tune in again. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.